Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Teresa and Mark Sievers. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Teresa Ann Grace Sievers was born on November 19, 1968, in Connecticut. In 1986, she graduated from high school as the valedictorian. In 1990, she earned a master's degree in biology, and in 1996, Teresa graduated from medical school. At some point, she married and divorced. In 2003, she married for the second time to a nurse named Mark Sievers. The couple went on to have two daughters, Josephine and Carmela. In 2006, the family moved to Bonita Springs, Florida, and lived in a house on Jarvis Road. Teresa opened an alternative healing practice not far from her home. Mark worked in the practice and also took care of their two daughters. Unconcerned about making a bold statement, Teresa represented herself as a quantum energy healer who took healing to the next level. Some people who interacted with Teresa found her very difficult to get along with, describing her as antagonistic and cantankerous. She often screamed and yelled at patients, insisting that they follow her instructions, and would regularly mistreat employees. Despite her screaming-driven symptom-solution style, she secured a surprisingly sizable and supportive patient base. In May 2015, Teresa's husband Mark traveled to Missouri to function as the best man in a friend's wedding. The name of the friend was Curtis Wayne Wright, a convicted felon who had been friends with Mark for many years. The two men looked a lot alike. Some of this was deliberate. For instance, when Mark lost his hair, Curtis shaved his own head to look more like Mark. Curtis would sometimes travel to Florida to work on computers in Teresa's medical practice. He would stay at the Sievers family house. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On Sunday, June 28, 2015, Teresa, Mark, and their two daughters were on a family vacation in New York. Teresa took a flight back to Florida that day because she had to see patients on Monday. Mark called a family friend named Mark Petritis and left him a message about Teresa's travel plans and mentioned he was checking in. This was out of the ordinary because the two men did not have a close relationship. On the next morning, Monday, June 29, Mark once again called Mark Petritis and asked him to stop by the house to check on Teresa. He gave him the garage code and instructed him to just walk in, rather than knocking on the front door. When Mark Petritis entered the house, he found Teresa face down on the kitchen floor in a pool of blood. He called 911, and he called Mark. He told Mark something terrible happened and Teresa was hurt. He did not want to mention that she was dead. Mark Sievers never asked how his wife was hurt or what hospital she had been taken to. Instead, he asked if it was a robbery. The subsequent investigation by the police revealed that Teresa Sievers had sustained multiple injuries to her head consistent with a hammer. A hammer containing her blood was found next to her body. There was damage to the side door of her house consistent with forced entry, but nothing was taken. Mark had a large collection of firearms and about $50,000 in cash inside the house. The police were able to confirm that Mark was in New York at the time of the murder. They did not have any leads. They had no idea who killed Teresa. This changed 2 weeks later when an informant from Illinois contacted the police. This informant overheard a conversation where Curtis Wright's wife, Angela, complained that Curtis took an unusual last-minute trip to Florida and left his cell phone behind. The police investigated Curtis and seized his cell phone, which connected him to a man named Jimmy Ray Rogers. When the police searched Jimmy's residence in Missouri, his girlfriend Taylor led them to evidence connecting Jimmy to Teresa's murder, including a backpack, shoes, shirts, a cooler, coveralls, and pieces of a prepaid cell phone. Curtis and Jimmy were arrested and charged with murder. Eventually, Curtis confessed to killing Teresa Sievers. Here is the story Curtis supplied to the police. In May 2015, when Mark Sievers traveled to Missouri to attend the wedding, the men had several conversations about how the relationship between Mark and Teresa had broken down. Mark was worried that Teresa was going to leave him and get custody of their daughters. He asked Curtis to murder Teresa. Eventually, Curtis agreed to carry out the homicide, in exchange for $100,000. This would be paid through life insurance. He recruited Jimmy to help him with the crime, but Mark did not know Jimmy's identity. Mark had explicitly told Curtis that he did not want to know about any accomplices Curtis may decide to hire. As they planned the murder, Mark and Curtis communicated using prepaid cell phones, sometimes referred to as burner phones. Mark knew that on Sunday, June 28, 2015, his wife Teresa would be returning home alone from the family vacation in New York. This would be the perfect time to strike because Mark would have an airtight alibi. He was staying in New York with his daughters until Wednesday. Mark created two plans for the murder. Curtis could kill Teresa at the family house on Sunday or at Teresa's medical office on Monday. Mark didn't care which plan Curtis followed. He just wanted to make sure it looked like the murder occurred during the course of a burglary or a robbery. If the murder took place at Teresa's office, Mark was fine with additional people being killed, referring to this as collateral damage. On June 27, Curtis and Jimmy left Missouri in a rental car. They arrived in Bonita Springs, Florida, early on June 28. They drove by Teresa's office to evaluate its suitability as a murder location, but felt they would be too exposed on that property. They decided the murder would take place at Teresa's house. The men arrived there at 10:30 p.m. and entered through an unlocked side door. They then damaged the door to make it look like there had been forced entry. The men expected Teresa to arrive at midnight, but they heard the garage door open at 11:25 p.m. Teresa pulled her vehicle into the garage, grabbed her luggage, and walked into the house. As she entered the kitchen, Curtis and Jimmy struck her head with hammers, killing her. After the murder, the men returned to Missouri. In January 2016, Curtis Wayne Wright accepted a plea deal. He agreed to testify against Mark and Jimmy. Ultimately, he pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and was sentenced to 25 years in prison. On February 26, 2016, Mark Seavers was arrested and charged in connection with his wife's murder. On October 23, 2019, Jimmy Ray Rogers was found guilty of second-degree murder. About 7 weeks later, he was sentenced to life in prison. In Florida, life means life without the possibility of parole. On December 4, 2019, Mark Seavers was convicted of first-degree premeditated murder and conspiracy to commit murder. On January 2, 2020, he was sentenced to death. At the time I'm making this video, Mark is awaiting execution. Now moving to my analysis. Mark Seavers maintains his innocence, and he has quite a few supporters, including several family members. They argue there is no credible evidence connecting Mark to the murder that was carried out by Curtis and Jimmy. The killers could have easily acted without Mark's involvement. This brings me to the question, is Mark guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he is guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. When Mark was visiting Missouri for the wedding, he was very eager to speak privately with Curtis. Later, the men both obtained burner phones. They would use these phones immediately after texting the code word "other" on their regular phones. Why were they being so secretive? Maybe they were trying to hide a murder. On Sunday, June 28, 2015, the day Teresa Seavers was murdered, Mark Seavers called a family friend and informed him of Teresa's travel plans. The next day, he called that friend again and asked him to check on Teresa. Mark gave him the garage code and said just walk in, rather than saying to knock on the door. When the friend called Mark later and said Teresa was hurt, Mark asked if it was a robbery. The investigation revealed that Curtis and Jimmy carried out the murder of Teresa. There is essentially no doubt about this. These men did not have any motive to kill her, which makes it seem like Mark must have been involved. At the time of Teresa's death, she had five life insurance policies totaling $4.4 million. Even though the family had about $50,000 in cash in the house, they had major financial problems. The life insurance policies would have solved those problems for Mark. When Curtis was arrested for Teresa's murder, Mark allegedly told a friend that Curtis didn't do it. He was not upset that his good friend could have been the killer. Rather, he was concerned that Curtis would implicate him. Now moving to the exculpatory factors. The key evidence connecting Mark to the murder came from Curtis, a man who was not a credible witness. Curtis had been convicted of multiple felonies in the past, had bipolar disorder, sustained a traumatic brain injury in a motor vehicle collision, and avoided life in prison, or the death penalty, by taking a plea deal. Initially, he lied to the police about his involvement in the murder, saying that he stayed outside Teresa's house while Jimmy committed the homicide alone. Curtis did not need Mark's help to carry out the murder. He had stayed in the Seavers family house on several occasions over the years. If Curtis was supposed to be paid $100,000 by Mark, why didn't Mark direct Curtis to take the $50,000 in cash that was inside his house? This would have made sense for two reasons. One, half the payment would have been satisfied, and two, it would be more consistent with a burglary. After he was convicted, Jimmy Ray Rogers sent a letter to Mark's mother indicating that Curtis killed Teresa in a spontaneous burst of anger. There was no plan to kill her in advance. Therefore, there was no conspiracy with Mark Seavers. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Mark Seavers is guilty? Yes, I believe he is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The state of Florida did not have as strong a case as they claimed, but they did have enough evidence. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Teresa and Mark Seavers had a rocky relationship. Some of this may have been due to Teresa's low level of agreeableness. Despite the arguing, Teresa had no plans on leaving the marriage. Mark, on the other hand, felt differently. He wanted Teresa to be dead and to collect on life insurance policies. Mark knew that he would be the obvious suspect if something happened to Teresa. Therefore, he needed to have an airtight alibi. The only way to do this was to hire someone to carry out the murder. He believed that Curtis was the type of man who would kill for money because of his criminal history. Also, Mark knew Curtis very well, so maybe Curtis would do it because they were friends. Mark's plan could have succeeded if the police never learned about the involvement of Curtis and Jimmy. Even after those men were arrested, Mark still had a chance of escaping justice. The problem he had was those burner phones. The men did a good job of concealing the information transmitted on those phones. The police never found out what they talked about. But they did not do a good job at concealing the fact that they had those phones in the first place. Their use of a code word to indicate when to switch to those phones was highly inculpatory. If Curtis and Jimmy randomly decided to kill Teresa and Mark had nothing to do with it, then Mark was extremely unlucky. He picked the wrong time to have secret communication with a convicted felon. Now moving to my final thoughts. Was there any way that Teresa Seavers could have known that she would be a murder victim? In many of the cases I've covered, there are red flags all over the place, including things like prior threats, a history of violence, infidelity, substance use, or clear signs of narcissism. In Teresa's case, however, there was no clear indication that she was in danger, at least not from her perspective. It probably wasn't a good idea to allow Curtis Wainwright, a convicted felon, to stay at her house from time to time, but it's not clear if Teresa knew anything about his background. The resemblance between Curtis and Mark may have only reinforced a sense of normalcy. How dangerous could Curtis be if he looked like Teresa's husband? This may have been one of those rare cases where a murder victim had absolutely no warning and no reason to be suspicious or fearful. Mark managed to capture his wife completely by surprise. Those are my thoughts on the case of Teresa and Mark Seavers. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.